Inside the Birds is back. What's going on, everybody? It's Jeff Mosher, Adam Kaplan, and we're going to call an audible here for this Inside the Birds because we've been doing our positional preview. Last pod, we did defensive line, and we were going to go and do linebacker, but there's actually some hard news here, some newsworthy items. The Eagles have made some moves, Adam. The assistant coaches have done their Zooms, and we have breaking news from an Inside the Birds standpoint.
We do?
They let me ask questions at the Zoom press conference.
Oh, right? Yeah. Oh, actually, it's so funny. You told me that you asked some questions.
Yeah.
But I forgot which coaches you asked.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's the there was another. There's Jeff McClain, who spells it with a J, and you spell it your first name with a G.
Right.
So what happened was I didn't know which guy was going to go. You know, I probably listened to 7 of the 9 coaches. Whatever many coaches they had speak this week. Anyway,
right.
I'm like, wait, which one is it going to be? And then it was you. I was like, oh wait, because you told me you asked Jason Michael a question.
I did.
And then there was another one, and I was like, oh, wow, how about that?
On a roll. So yeah. Shout out to the Eagles PR staff for allowing me to do that. So sometimes, I don't know if our listeners know this, so a lot has changed in the last year and a half with COVID and press conferences being on Zoom. But so when you and I were at games, right, you're there with a credential through Sirius XM. I was at games, only games, right, with a credential through both Sirius NFL radio, because I would do the updates for them, in-game updates for people driving around or listening on the radio. And I also did it for ESPN radio. So that's how you and I were at the games. But a lot of times we'll get like, can you ask this question or can you ask this question? But we were not at press conferences throughout the week, like Doug Peterson's press conference and things like that. So we're working on as we built the Inside the Birds brand, right? We're working on getting re-credentialed and getting back into the daily mix. But we're not in the daily. We're not like Jeff McClain or Les Bowen, right? And who's there every single day. And nobody really is, quote unquote.
Yeah, there. I mean, I'm credentialed to 3 Sirius XM, so I'm good. But
Right. But right. Even with your credential, we're not there every single day.
Yeah,
the season, right?
Sure.
So there had been this kind of thing over the last year and a half with the Zoom conferences that a lot of people are on it, but the Eagles tend to just let the beat reporters who are there ask the questions mostly, you know, so you'll hear Jeff and you'll hear Les and you'll hear John McMullen and you'll hear the Rob Motti and other people like that. So the funny part is I'm on the Zooms the other day and I wanted to ask a question to Aaron Moorhead, I believe it was. And now remember, I haven't been called on to ask a question for a year and a half, right? So Aaron Moorhead's doing his press conference and they're doing like the normal schedule of people who ask questions. And I had to walk away from the computer for a minute to help my daughter out with some of her virtual learning. Right. So as I walk away about a minute later, I do hear Jeff, next question's for Jeff. Are you there? And then, as I'm walking back to the computer, I'm thinking it's McClain, right? I'm thinking it's Jeff McClain because I haven't been called on in a year and a half.
Yeah.
Then I hear, Jeff, are you there? And Jeff's not there. So this was actually to Jamal Singleton, now that I think about it, not Aaron Moorhead. So the press conference ends. I text somebody, hey, was that question for me? Was that me that we're calling on?
Uh-huh.
And the text I got back, yeah, it was you. And I was like, I can't freaking believe it. I get
what are the chances,
first time
right?
They call on me in a year and a half. So I made sure I was there for the next press. It was with Jason Michael, the tight ends coach, and they gave me the first question. So I was like, I'm back. You ever see, what's the movie? Mortimer and from Trading Places, right? I think it's Coming to America, where they're bums at the end, and then they get all this money, and they look at each other and go, we're back. If you've ever seen Coming to America, it's a really funny
I have, movie. Yeah, great. Yeah. That was Trading Places, Mortimer and Trading
Right, Place. They were, but those two guys were in Coming to America because they had lost all their money, and they were homeless. And
oh, God, I don't even remember that. Were
Eddie
they?
Murphy is Prince Hakeem, and he walks by when he's taking Lisa out on a date, and he just gives, like, $1 billion to these two guys.
It's so funny. I did not even.
They look in the paper bag, and they're like, holy cow.
Wait, did you see the remake of that?
I haven't seen it yet, and partly because I'm afraid of being let down. I know it's not going to be as good as the first one, but I will see it eventually.
Like, Beverly Hills Cop 2 was good, not as good as maybe. I don't know. It was good, actually. One of the rare sequels that was good.
Yeah, that was good.
Caddyshack 2 was an absolute embarrassment.
Yes, it was. Indeed, it was. It was nothing like Caddyshack 1. But nonetheless, we were back, and I'm answering. And now I'm back in the press conferences. It was awesome. So, again, shout out to the Eagles PR staff for letting me ask a few questions there. So we're going to talk about some of these press conferences, and we're going to get into some of the moves that were made. Make sure you guys are checking out Q&A, because they had a really interesting introduction. They had a good start, Adam, to, as they always do, their show, because they specifically talked about these 6 weeks now between the end of OTAs and the start of training camp. And they talked a lot about some of those like quarterback wide receiver workouts that like Donovan would have in Arizona that were kind of like legendary, because Donovan wouldn't drink water, right? He was like supposed to be so well conditioned that he wouldn't drink water in a workout. And you know, Carson Wentz had those workouts also with his receivers, I think in Houston last year and in North Dakota South Dakota a couple of years ago. So, but they had interesting opinions on the values, how much, you know, you actually get done during these workouts, and then how guys stay in shape. And Adam, you'll remember this, the name. Jason told a story about Chris Clemens. You remember Chris Clemens?
Yeah, the DN. Yeah.
Yeah, the defensive end from Seattle. Now, if you remember Chris Clemens, if you're old enough to remember the Eagles signing him, he's like kind of this joker pass rusher that Jim Johnson was supposed to be able to use in a variety of ways because he had great wingspan and length, right? But if you remember, he started off very slowly that year, and it was a pretty big contract that he signed. And Avant recalled him coming to camp just not being in shape at all.
Ooh.
And suffering what he called a full body cramp. And I'm laughing. It really wasn't funny. He basically was saying he was so, you know, I guess out of shape and in so much pain that he actually wound up having to go to the hospital.
Ooh.
Probably for dehydration. I'm not 100% sure about that, but whatever, you know, usually cramps, you're dehydrated, right?
Yeah.
So he was saying this wasn't like a hamstring or it was a full body cramp because Andy Reid, we've talked about it. He ran, this is Lehigh. This is the thick air and Andy Reid going in pads 5, 6, 7 days in a row. And Chris Clemens, now, you know, this more than anyone from being out in Seattle. I think Chris Clemens also started his career in Oakland, if I'm not mistaken. Did he not?
No, I think you're thinking of
somebody else.
Check. You're not thinking of the guy who went from the Eagles to Oakland, right?
No, not Derek Burgess.
Right, right.
Oh, you know what? He may have played in Oakland after the Eagles. Either way, he was used to West Coast, where it's not nearly as humid. The air is crisper. I don't think he recognized what a real July at Lehigh was like, and in the Northeast with all that thick humidity and everything like that. So he was just trying to make the point, Jason, with that you can't come to training camp here in Philly not in peak shape and ready to compete in this hot sun and humidity. And that was the point Nick Sirianni made in his press conference, that everybody better show up in the best shape of their life. So a lot of it, you might think, like people at home listening, right? You might think, of course, they're football players. They always come in shape, or they're in 10 times better shape than you and I. Yes, that's true. But they're not always in football shape when it's time to put those pads on. And it's pretty evident, Adam, when guys are not. I don't know if you remember that, Chris Clemens.
Well, I do remember. So a couple things with Clemens. You're right. He did play for the Raiders before the Eagles. One year. That's where he came from.
Right.
And then played for Seattle after that. But that's the funny thing was that training camp in 08, if you recall, he was doing so poorly. Some of the writers were in their final 53 saying he's going to be cut. Now, I remember talking to the Eagles at that point. They were never considered cutting him.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. He didn't perform well. Now, he wound up doing better. The only thing is he had a 5-year deal, only played 2 years for him, obviously, so it didn't work out as well.
It wasn't a great signing.
Right, right. But he did. He started to come on at least a little bit. But it was just funny. Like, they're like saying they're actually going to cut him on a 5-year deal in the first year. No, it's not happening.
No, he was one of the standouts, though, in the 44-6 win over Dallas at the end of the year, where all those things had to happen, and then they did, and the Eagles went out and stomped on the Cowboys to get into the playoffs, and then they went all the way to the NFC Championship game that year, but he was a big part of that. But, you know, you're right in that they weren't going to cut him after a year. I think did they do that to Stacey Andrews, though? Didn't they cut him after one year after signing him to a huge deal?
He was so bad.
He was, I mean,
And you know, I don't know if I'll ever get the truth on that one, but there's a lot of speculation that they signed Stacy to help Sean out. Maybe Sean would play better. You know, who knows?
Right.
There are all sorts of theories. But the thing is, did he even actually play for the Eagles, Stacy Andrews?
I think he played in a couple of games. Yeah. But it took him a while to become a starter, and then he didn't play very well.
Bad. Yeah, it was bad.
The real thing is, like, if we could go back and listen, Andy Reid had some epic press conferences where he was trying to describe empathetically what Stacy Andrews was going through when it was clear he just couldn't play. And Andy was like, well, you know, he's got the Andy would talk about, like, the post leg has trouble planting because he was coming off the ACL surgery. And it's like, okay, he's not the first football player or first offensive lineman to ever have ACL surgery.
I remember that just as you said it. I remember him describing what the issues were.
Many times he would have to kind of go into it. And after several weeks, Adam, it became, all right, well, I mean, come on, Andy. You know, like you said that 7 weeks ago.
Well, look, coaches' jobs. Chip Kelly did it for DeMarco Murray with his hamstring injury.
Right.
Coaches will – they're going to try to cover for a player. They don't want the truth to come out, or they just want to try to lessen the criticism of the player.
Yeah.
You know, getting back to Chris Clemens, boy, did he play well for Seattle after he left Philly.
Of course.
Like he played exceptionally well. He had three straight years of double digit sacks.
Uh-huh.
But man, in Philly, boy, he was definitely disappointing. He was so bad in training camp that year, this first year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, man, I don't know. But
that's why I asked you, because I know that you go, and I know you probably haven't gone in a year or two, but you're always on your training camp tour. You go to Oakland's camp, which is in Napa, correct?
Yeah, correct. And, yes. And my first year was 2005. Yeah. I just don't remember him there.
It's like there, not only is it nice crisp air and they lack humidity, but they're at this beautiful Marriott. It's like, you know, you're treated lavishly, right?
How did you know that? Were you ever there?
No, I'm Adam. I've been covering this league for 15 years.
Well, here's the funny thing, though. That's an older Marriott, but
right.
It's.
But I've been to that one. It's the spa and resort Marriott.
Yes, it's on like it's in like a weird location. It's right off the highway.
Yep.
It's on Solano at Solano Avenue.
Yes.
I only know this because I've been there since 2005. Right. And it's killing me. We didn't go last year.
Right.
Now it's supposed to be their last year there, so I'm assuming that they're not going to have it. The latest I'd heard was going to be in Tahoe, but I don't know what. I have to ask the Raiders where they're going to have it.
Nice.
They but do man, it in style. You just. I'm sorry?
They do it up in style there.
They do. I've never been to Tahoe. But
think about that difference. Like, you're going from the Napa Marriott and beautiful air, and it's never. Lehigh. And then you show up in Lehigh and you're sleeping
terrible.
In a dorm with a wooden bed.
I know. I'll say this, though. I don't know about you, but I do miss Lehigh. I like the, you know, it's a far, it's, you know, not the easiest drive, but it's a little bit longer. But
yeah,
I kind of like, see, now you would, because you're working for a newspaper then, and also then. You left the News Journal and then you went to Comcast Sportsnet.
Right.
Were you stationed there every day? Like, were you like one of the beat reporters that had to be there every day?
Adam, I was a really young and dumb reporter when I was working for the News Journal. And I did a lot of things that I thought were like good team player type things that I look back on and say, you know what? Like, I gave that company more than it gave me. And as far as like the News Journal, you know, when I became the Eagles beat writer there in 2005, well, no, I was number two. In 2005, I was like the GA, and then 2006, I became the beat writer. That's a time where newspapers were really struggling and condensing, and, you know, columnists were getting laid off, and, you know, the internet was really starting to pop for that stuff. And, you know, I knew it was a struggling industry. So I said, you know what, I'm not, they would have been content if I went to training camp twice a week and got a lot of information the two times I went and just wrote stories every single day and then did updates. But I could not cover the team that way. I just am not built that way, right? So I also knew that, you know, if I wanted to stay up there every day, it would have been a very large hotel expense. You know, only the Inquirer and Daily News and bigger places were doing that. So I, living in South Jersey, commuted every single day to Lehigh. I was waking up at 4:30 in the morning, because remember, practice starts at like 8:15, and even though it's only an hour and a half drive theoretically, you can't be on the Schuylkill at 6:15, 7:30 and expect that you're going to fly through it. So I would have to wake up at 4:30 and be out by a quarter to five. Then I was there till 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night. Jeez. Then I would drive home, and then I would literally wake up the next morning and do it all over again.
Wow.
So it was a very, very, I did that for one summer, and I said, I just can't live like, I can't do this. So, you know, I made it the next year, the hotel, the newspaper, and I, you know, I talked it over with my editors, my staff. They were a little bit more, you know, generous with the money to get me to stay there, like at least twice a week, I think it was. Once I was with Comcast, I could stay there whenever I wanted. And that was great, right? Because I had much better resources, obviously. But yeah, I did some young and dumb things in the name of being a good team player, but it was also in the name of trying to just outwork everybody, or, mm-hmm. you know, in my mind, you know, so yeah, that was part of it. But that was real bear, man. That's not something I could do now with, you know, two children and a whole list of responsibility. Back then I was, you know, I was married, but I didn't have kids, and I was just, you know, it's all right. Who cares if I'm worn down? Now it's like, I can't believe I did that. You know,
see, with my camp tour, what happens is, you know, I'm just flying all the time, and
right.
flying does take a lot out of you, especially when you're changing time zones and you start to lose track of where the hell you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, funny, I was in 05, my first tour. I don't even know if I had GPS. I'm sure they didn't have it then, because
mm-hmm.
Garmin came out later. So it was always, you know, you print out from your computer, you print out the directions.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is, because we didn't have Google Maps then, they weren't always correct. And I never took a map with me. I just would print everything out for my whole trip. And every once in a while, I get lost, man. It's not fun being lost when you don't know where the hell you are.
Right, right. Anyway. I should point out, by the way, that in 2006, my first year on the beat, the Eagles at the time would take over a couple of dormitories and take a room and give it to a member of the media. So we all had dorm rooms that we could stay in. And so that year that I did a lot of the commuting back and forth, there were a couple of times where I stayed in the dorm room, but like, it's a dorm room. I don't even remember if there was air conditioning. Like, it's a wooden bed. It's not somewhere and for those nights, like the night before the first padded practice, I probably stayed in the dorm room that night, and then three or four other nights. But, you know, just to go home and be in my own bed and see my wife and everything.
I know the feeling.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, as you just said, and we were talking about this on the last show, I would get so excited for the first day in pads, because I think that's when Andy would hit, right? Just about.
Yeah, they came out hitting. That was yeah.
Oh, there's nothing like it. Now I don't. It doesn't even matter anymore what camps I go to and when I go, because they're not going to hit. Teams don't hit,
mm-hmm.
and the practices are so light. I don't worry about not getting to a team's camp the first day. It doesn't really matter. I get the information I need to get from who I need to get it from, but.
Mm-hmm.
I do like watching practice. I'm one of the weirdos who love watching practice. It's boring as hell, but I like to learn. So the Andy practices with the hitting, there's nothing like it. Like, you, there's just something about it, because you knew he was going to hit. You knew they're going to hit.
Right. And it was the first day was always great. And it was great because the players really knew it. And as much as they hate it, they embrace the first day of it because they know they got to do it.
Nothing like it. And the fans at Lehigh, man, they went out of their minds for it. Oh,
yeah, they did. All right. So those were some fun memories. Want to get into a couple of the transactions. First, we got to remind everybody, as we always do, to stop being a loser and stop paying full retail price for things you want. Get on DealDash right now. Go to DealDash.com or download the app. And when you register, enter the promo code ITB for a special offer for some bonus free bids. That's promo code ITB for a special offer for some bonus free bids. All right, Adam. So the Eagles made some moves that surprised many, because it's a weird time to be doing it, I guess. They waived two players. They waived Jamie Newman, the quarterback that was a undrafted free agent, and they waived Khalil Tate as well. And he was on the team. He was on the practice squad last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
Right?
He was actually.
Go ahead.
I think he was with them last year. He was signed as an undrafted free agent last year, and then cut him.
Yeah, didn't he get activated for one game or no? Am I?
I don't think so.
No, I'm mistaking him for someone else probably.
Yeah, because what happened was, and the funny thing is, they gave him a little bit of a guarantee last year and then cut him.
Mm-hmm.
He got cut in July of last year. Then he got signed to a reserve future contract this past January. Anyway, he's a former college quarterback. He was never going to make it anyway.
Right.
Not a surprise they do this now. Then Trevon Grimes was waived injured. So let me explain what happens here.
Mm-hmm.
one of two things will happen. He'll either stay, when he clears waivers later today, which is Thursday, he'll go on injured reserve. The Eagles have two choices. Either he stays on injured reserve the entire season, or they work out an injury settlement where he gets waived off of IR, and then he could come back later in the season. The chances of him playing for the Eagles this season are slim to none. Mm-hmm. It was a long shot anyway, but he's a guy that they had hoped for the practice squad.
Right.
And then the other part is, if he didn't get hurt and had a great camp, because they are so – we've talked about many times how they have no experience. They just don't have any real proven depth. Mm-hmm. If he would have blown up preseason and training camp, he could have made the team, but now that's passed. So they're down to 8 receivers right now that are on the roster technically right now.
Right.
Fulgham, Rager, Devontae Smith, Greg Ward, Hightower, Quest Watkins, Ortega Whiteside, and Osborne, the rookie undrafted free agent.
Mm-hmm.
Teams generally keep 5 receivers. They only keep 6 when someone earns it or for special teams. Like, if a guy's an exceptional special teams player, they're not going to cut the guy.
Right.
Like Rudy Ford, right? Rudy Ford was never going to play defense for the Eagles. He did a little bit, very little.
Mm-hmm.
But he made it because he was their fastest special teams player.
Yeah, like a Chris Maragos type of player.
Exactly, yeah. Right. Only – they don't – like Matthew Slater, Jackie Slater's son with New England. He'll never play for receiver.
Good one, right.
Yeah. So now, spinning this forward here, let's get to Jamie Newman. So my understanding is – he's not expected back. This is not one of those, okay, wink, wink, nod, nod. We need a roster spot. Just stay in the air. You're going to bring you back in July.
Right.
Sounds like, from what I understand, is it just didn't work out. The thing with Jamie Newman, I could just tell you this from talking to a lot of teams about him. I understand, like, he didn't play last year. He opted out, and then he transferred also, which was a very weird – I know teams were not comfortable with the situation. The reason why he wasn't drafted had very little to do with it. It's his accuracy.
Right.
The tape showed it. I'm not talking about his percentage accuracy
mm-hmm.
From stats. I'm talking about what the tape looked like. A lot of coaches I spoke with had real issues with his accuracy.
Is that related to mechanics, I would imagine?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Because now, go ahead.
I was just going to say, he's got talent. He's got good size. He's got strength in his arm. But Kyle Bowler, we learn with this, Kyle Bowler, former first-round pick of the Ravens, it doesn't matter how good of an arm you have. If you can't throw with accuracy, you have no chance.
Mm.
And Newman did nothing to distinguish himself, and I'll leave it at that. And he goes through waivers, mm-hmm. as Khalil Tate does. You know, we had said with Newman, their hope was that he was never going to make the team. Their hope was that he would be on their practice squad. And we talked about Clayton Thorson.
Right.
Now, Thorson was drafted as a 5th-rounder. That didn't work out. But they have – since the Nate Sudfeld implosion, they don't have that developmental quarterback. That could be a 3rd quarterback if they're going to keep 3 or be on the practice squad. They just don't have that guy right now.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting to be to only have 2 quarterbacks going, you know, this late in June. And obviously with training camp 6 or 7 weeks away, I mean, have to think that they're going to still bring somebody in.
Well, they are. That's going to happen. Yeah. They're going to add one guy. Mm-hmm. My understanding is it's going to be sort of a West Coast offensive guy.
Makes sense.
The names that I'm hearing, Nick Mullen, formerly the Niners, who definitely played in West Coast offense. Ironically, who did he go against last year? The Eagles.
The Eagles, yeah.
Maybe
and one of the few guys who lost to the Eagles last year.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's true. It's one of only 4 quarterbacks. Could be like a guy like Sean Mannion.
Interesting name.
Yeah, who played for Rams head coach Sean McVay,
right?
Yeah, run West Coast offense.
Mm-hmm.
Those would be there's another one. I don't remember the other name, but look for one of those guys to sign here as the 3rd quarterback.
Is there any chance that that Gardner Minshew becomes available, or the Jacksonville would want
He has been available before the draft. They have too many quarterbacks there. It's funny you mentioned that, but see, here's the thing though. Flacco's the backup. Gardner Minshew,
I got you. I see what you're saying.
I get it, because Minshew actually, 2 years ago, 6 AFC Rookie Awards.
Right.
Rookie of the Week. You know, he did really well. I know he wasn't very good. I know he fell off last season. And that coaching staff did not handle that. That thing was butchered, the way that they handled the quarterback situation last year.
Right, right.
Jake Luton's there. C.J. Beathard, formerly of the Niners.
Right.
And Gardner Minshew, who's talented, he could certainly fit in a West Coast type of scheme that they're going to run here. I don't see it, but I like your point, though. I know where you're going here. What about him as a developmental quarterback? I would love it. I know there are teams that really like him. I know there were some teams interested in Minshew, but I just before the draft, during the draft, things just didn't work out.
Right.
So right now, Minshew's probably going to be their backup quarterback in Jacksonville.
Oh, that's pretty interesting. Okay. I mean, just a name to kind of monitor.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Go ahead. He's kind of a good example. I've been trying to think of a few like on the spot while we do our pods and talk quarterbacks about how it's hard to judge a guy off 1 year, especially a young guy, because you've seen examples of guys really kind of take the league by storm and then regress to the mean. You know, Blake Bortles came to mind. I think he had a really good second year, right? When he had Allen Robinson,
numbers.
He threw like 31 touchdowns in his second year.
You know why I know that? Because for fantasy, he was so good because he they would get behind, he'd have to throw.
Right.
It's so funny you mentioned that because I remember him and Allen Robinson were just ridiculous 1 year together. Maybe 15 or 16, I don't remember. But
right. And then Minshew would probably fit into that mold of a guy, although you started to see it even the first year where he was Minshew mania right from the start and doing well. But as the season went on, you could see, you know, some of the flaws in his game, as you would expect for a rookie who's a sixth-round pick.
Correct.
He
got bent from that London game. I think they might have played the Texans.
Yeah.
He was awful in that game.
Right.
And then he got hurt. What did he – I can't remember the injury that he had, but
That's just – it just goes to my point where it's like, you know, if it's quote-unquote a year to judge Jalen Hurts, like, is that enough? Is that fair? Does everything around him work well? Does he get hurt? Does somebody get – so it's just – folds into the conversation.
Well, you have to take all the factors, right?
Of course.
You look at what's the guy's name? DeFilippo coached him Minshew in 19, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good together. Then they went back to who the hell was the other, who was the other quarterback with Jacksonville in 19?
Foles. Yeah, it was Foles. Yeah. And then Foles got hurt in game. Well, Foles getting hurt in game one is what led to Minshew mania.
Correct. I believe. Correct.
If I'm correct. Yeah.
Exactly
now,
right.
Not. He got now hurt. I can't remember. But go ahead.
No, that's fine. But he got, Minshew's a interesting quarterback. So let's get back to the Eagles, though, in terms of developmental quarterback. They don't have that guy.
Right.
They're going to sign somebody for camp. Now, someone asked me in my Twitch chat about Josh McCown. That was a very unique situation. Doug Peterson went along with it, you know, because he didn't have a problem with it. But this is for the practice squad. Right. Josh is not retired as far as I know, but I don't see that happening.
He's not a coach with the Texans. For some reason, I thought he wound up taking a Texans coaching.
He did last year.
Oh, that's right. It was last year.
Actually cut him. The Texans actually cut him. But remember Josh, I think, did Josh not interview for their head coaching job? I think
I know there was a report that he was going to. I'm not sure if he did.
I thought he did. I just know he's very well liked in their building.
Texas. Yeah. Well, it's a couple of buildings he's well liked in now.
Yeah. Good dude. Really knows football. I've always enjoyed talking to Josh.
But not a guy that you would classify as a developmental quarterback. I mean,
No. That's right. That's why it would make no sense. Josh, by the way, is a really good evaluator. I always like talking ball with him about personnel and stuff. But
oh, cool.
There's just the quarterbacks out there. Forget RG3. That ain't happening. Brandon Allen, formerly of the Bengals, is out there. Matt Barkley. Ha, ha, ha. I don't think so. There's just Brett Hundley's out there. So, yeah,
your
I don't
ha 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 is awesome, by the way. Matt Barkley. Ha, ha, ha.
No, because I'm going to save this for our stories, our funny career stories of Matt Barkley.
Right.
Pretty funny. Yeah, I got a funny story.
So getting back to Jamie Newman real quick, though.
Yeah, sure.
We said after they signed him, there seemed to be a lot of buzz from like us getting like reaction from fans and things about Newman and about Grimes. Now, Grimes got.
Newman
got hurt apparently. I I don't want to say he was bad, but I mean, I kind of think if he was really good, if they felt really highly on him, they would just still have him on the roster, even with him being hurt. I don't know how bad
it's got to be a major injury. It's got to be a decent enough injury.
Like he's not going to be able to compete at training camp.
Right. Right. Okay. It's got to be like, even if it's not that bad, it's like a high ankle sprain, you know, high ankle sprain. He's got a bad one. It could be 2 months. Who knows?
Sure.
But
for Newman, I mean, there was even a sentiment that this guy was going to push Joe Flacco for the backup job.
Who's and you and I was that out there?
I did see it out there, yes. And it I mean, wasn't just fans. No, so my point is this, is that there were forces trying to kind of say, hey, Jamie Newman, watch. And we both did this podcast and said, look, he's going to get a shot to try to, you know, make the practice squad, but don't get so hung up on Jamie Newman. And this is an example of why we do this, right? I mean, there are still people who are reacting to this news that were saying, what was one of the reactions? The Eagles are making a big mistake here, getting rid of Newman and Grimes. And I'm like, I almost get that sometimes after a great preseason, like Henry Josie.
Oh, Henry Josie.
At least you get to see him in the preseason ripping up defenses.
Oh, my God.
But nobody actually saw Jamie Newman do it. I mean, there's no videos out there of practices. So to say that this is a big mistake is basically – it's like the biggest reach in the world.
The fans. Okay, I understand. There's some fans who watch college football that, you know, like.
Right.
Okay,
right.
That's fine.
Right. Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, that's why we were trying to tell people in the podcast, like, don't get so hung. Because we know with quarterbacks especially, people get excited because they see them play on Saturdays a whole lot. But
what I would say that about the situation with developmental players is, believe me, they're looking for receivers they could develop who are, you know, a little bit further down the line here, like in terms of the roster. Mm-hmm. Like they'd love to develop Osborn. It's highly unlikely he makes the roster. Mm-hmm. Grimes is a more talented player. I still don't think he would have made it, but he would have had a shot because Watkins is no guarantee. Hightower is definitely not a guarantee to make the roster. Right. Zeke Whiteside's not a guarantee to make the roster. There's opportunity at the receiver position here.
Yeah.
They're the second. The Broncos and the Eagles are the youngest receiver corps in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. There's opportunity here, guys, you know, to seize a role.
It's going to be fun. It's actually fun to think about competition at training camp when usually there's only like three spots or four spots that you're ordinarily focused on. A lot more this year, so that'll be exciting. Let's get into the assistant coaches and our takeaways from some of their Zooms. We'll start with Brian Johnson. I really liked his press conference. You know, very straightforward, like a pensive guy, you know, a thinker, had some really good things to say both about Jalen Hurts and Joe Flacco. I mean, he was very complimentary of the work. He said Joe Flacco had put in to, you know, get to know the playbook and just having the experience that Flacco brings, because this, again, Brian's a guy who he's very aware that this is his first go around in the NFL and his backup quarterback is a Super Bowl champion. So I think he kind of made the point of saying Brian's not coming in here trying to act like he knows everything and he can teach everybody everything. He's trying to, you know, do his job, but also appreciate and respect that he has a nice young developmental guy in Jalen Hurts. And then a guy who's won a Super Bowl in Joe Flacco, and not just a Super Bowl. I mean, he was in the playoffs for like five straight years before he won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And you know, Brian Johnson, I know some people bring up that he was on the cover of the NCAA game.
Yes. Yeah. And he was like, I don't even think my players have seen that version of the
game. Yeah, it was funny. It was funny. This is what some coaches who know him told me, really, really good leadership skill. Like he's real good command. I know in his press conference, he was kind of like, you know, I won't say low key, but nothing, you know, he wasn't coaching in the press conference. You can't really see the way he works, but I've talked to guys who know him pretty well. He coaches pretty well. He's a good teacher. He's interviewed for a couple college head coaching jobs, I believe. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, I think he was asked that about that and why didn't he just stay in college and become a college head coach? But
right. As
he said, look, this is the pros here, man.
Yeah, how do you pass up an NFL job, right?
Sure. So who knows? He might be an OC because remember, he was an OC at Florida. Mm-hmm. So he might be an OC in the NFL someday. So, I didn't realize this. I knew he knew Hurts as a kid, but I forgot that that Johnson knows his dad. You know, his dad is a coach. So This is a very unique situation. I can't remember the last time I heard a quarterback coach has known the starting quarterback since he was a little kid. That's like, you just don't, not something like you hear every day.
Did you feel like, I got the sense that he tried to downplay that, meaning like, I don't think he wants people to think that just because he's known him, that he's going to be light on him and he's not going to coach him hard. And maybe Brian, and this might just be like overthinking on my part, maybe Brian came in here and understands the dynamic that was here before him, which was you have a coaching staff that did not coach its star quarterback very hard. Right. So I don't know. I just feel like he didn't expand the way you thought he might on how he's known Jalen. And he told a few stories and then that was it, which is fine. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah. I think you might, there's no way to know, but I kind of got that same impression because you know, it's the other interesting thing about this before we move to the next coach, The Eagles downplayed this and they kind of denied this was the case why he was hired. Mm-hmm. because Wentz was still on the roster at the time that he was hired. They said it had nothing to do with Hurts. I have a hard time believing that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's one, you know, with these things, sometimes you just never get the truth.
True.
But come on. You can't tell me that this was not part of the reason why he was hired. I mean, it's come on.
You think? I don't know.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this guy had a fairly prominent position.
I get it, but that puts you on the radar because you knew Hurts. Like, I would have to think they would have known that.
So I could understand if you felt that was if Jeffrey Lurie were making the hire, or Howie, and not Nick Sirianni. I mean, we know that Jeffrey and Howie were the guys who were most bullish on Jalen Hurts. So I can understand if they had a lot of influence in that decision. But if this was a Nick Sirianni centric decision, I don't, maybe that helped, but I don't know if that swung it one way or another. I mean,
I don't know that. I'm just saying, yeah. I just have to think it had to be some factor at some level. It may have been 10% of the reason,
right,
that they hired him, but I have to think that, again, I'm not reporting anything on this. I'm just giving an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder if it was in the back of Sirianni's mind or Roseman's mind, hey, Jalen might be our starter.
Mm-hmm.
This might not be a bad thing to do. But of course, Wentz is still in the roster.
Right.
And again, I don't even know what the timeline was. Were they convinced they're going to have to trade Wentz by then? Because they weren't. They were not, as I understand it, when they were interviewing coaches, as we first reported back at this time, when they were interviewing the coaches. The coaches they were interviewing were under the belief that Wentz is going to be back. And then 2 weeks later, he wasn't. So who knows?
And there you go. Right. All right. And the next guy was Jamal Singleton, who's still waiting for me.
Interesting interview, by the way.
Yeah, definitely. He's still waiting for me to hit unmute and ask him a question, I guess.
What's that?
He's still waiting for me to ask him the question.
Oh, that was the one. Yeah, Singleton was the guy you should talk to. Okay.
Exactly.
Right.
I enjoyed his because he talked about going kind of digging into the tape on certain guys and
all of them. No, he said he saw.
He
everywhere he goes. He watches all their tape before he coaches them.
Right. Right. And, you know, pass protection, blitz pickup, those are obviously big for him, just like they were for Deuce Staley, which is good. And he seemed to be very, very open to discuss that he feels like there's a lot of potential there still with Miles Sanders.
Yeah, it's interesting. Jordan Howard, he was at his pro day. Miles Sanders, he was at his pro day.
Right.
He discussed the running back room. He was asked about having a rotation or just one guy doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about what most coaches believe now. You just can't have one guy. Doesn't mean that Sanders won't be the main guy. We know he is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But you definitely need – you can't just – because this is how guys wear down. You don't want to give a guy – not that anyone averages 20 carries anymore. That it's rarely happens. But you just don't want a guy to wear down. So you want to have a rotation going. And then the other nugget he dropped – I mean, I know he was at Air Force. I didn't realize he coached there. He coached Chad Hall at Air Force.
Oh, that's right. That was an interesting
– That was an interesting one. And Chad Hall's pro day, by the way.
Uh-huh.
His pro, like, apparently he ran an incredible, I don't know what he ran, Mav, was a 4.3 or 4.4, apparently.
I better. He's so low to the ground.
I know, you're right.
That's quickly.
Right. Boy, the Eagles thought he was going to be Danny Woodhead. They just, Marty Morningway couldn't figure it out with Chad Hall.
Who did the Eagles think Jeremy Bloom was going to be?
That was a mess. Boy, he was an Olympian and all this, being a great returner. Boy, he didn't do anything.
No, right. The Eagles had some fun with some project type of players in those years.
Did any of them work, these project players?
I'll say this. I think Chad Hall made the 53. I mean,
he did. He was there for a bit.
That's a success story. Anytime
true. But I'm talking about a guy who actually made it and became a starter.
Reno Mahe was a punt returner.
Who's that?
Reno Mahe. He was a starting punt returner.
Yeah, but was he?
No, nah, I'm just kidding. He wasn't really a project. But
no, I was thinking, he was working on Fridays.
But no, I can't think of somebody that they changed positions for, like from offense to defense or vice versa, sure. Or played a different sport and they just
let us know, because I know folks will let us know on our YouTube or Facebook page. But no, Mailata's a project. Now that one's a home run to this point. Just the fact that he's even going to have a chance to start is crazy. So I give him credit.
Yeah,
he's drafted though.
Definitely. So a lot really interesting stuff on the running backs from Jamal Singleton. And the fact that he coached Chad Hall was really brought it home for us. Next up was tight ends coach Jason Michael, who the big thing was for him is that he's been in contact with Zach Ertz. Now, he didn't really reveal the contents of those conversations, but he has been in contact with Zach Ertz.
Yeah, didn't you ask him a question? And it was hilarious. We're gonna get roasted for this one. What did you ask him?
So after I asked the question, I thought to myself, the Eagles just allowed me to start asking questions, and they may just completely shut me down after this, because I wanted to ask him about Jake Stoll, right? The rookie Jack free Stoll. Agent. Jack Stoll, thank you, from Nebraska. And as I'm thinking about the question to ask him, it occurs to me that we've been talking about Jack Stoll kind of being this year what they were hoping to have last year in Noah Togiai, right? And Noah Togiai played for the Colts last year, which is where...
and Jason Michael coached him.
Tight ends coach. So it just kind of came out of my mouth. I'm like, Coach, how did you guys know about Noah Togiai? There were no preseason games.
That was funny. I know. And he could,
you know, what squirmed. Like, you know, listen, you and I have talked about this. We don't understand how they know. And there's probably, in all likelihood, somebody from the coaching staff tipped the Colts off.
I don't know.
I don't know.
No, but what I liked is, and it was a little bit of an inside football thing.
Uh-huh.
He described how this, the scouting works for, in terms of when you're going to claim a guy off waivers,
right?
The GM or the personnel director goes to you, the position coach, goes, hey, listen, I don't know if you've seen this kid before the draft, but we're probably going to claim him. We're going to put a claim in for him. What do you think? I don't know. Did he say he went back and watched tape, or did he?
Yeah, I think what he said was, you know, then you got to go kind of, and this happens a lot right around waiver cutdown, where guys got to go quickly examine, you know, several games of tape to see what it is they're getting and give an opinion on it. So, and I think Michael had said that they were looking for a guy who had both blocking and catching ability, but you know, and they were fortunate enough to be able to watch some quick tape on him and make that decision. Mm-hmm. So, and then I did ask him about Jack Stoll, and I said that right? Jack Stoll.
Jack Stoll.
I don't know why I want to say Jake for every time, but anyway. And again, he was not very, like most coaches, they're not going to give you, you know, War and Peace worth of scouting report. They're keeping the stuff kind of internal, as they should. But obviously he sees some promise there, and he certainly was effusive in his praise for Dallas Goedert.
Yeah, this, from what I understand, the staff is super high on Goedert. So it's we'll see, because you know what? I think, yeah, he talked about it, how Goedert could do everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's so important today's NFL, because you just don't if you talk to offensive coordinators or tight end coaches, they'll tell you these kids are slot tight ends in college. They don't block for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And Goedert, the Eagles got very lucky with him in that he's one of the few all around tight ends that's been in the draft for years. George Kittle, obviously, is tremendous. Who's an all around tight end.
Right.
15 for 15 against the Eagles last year. Was it 15 catches on 15 targets? What the hell was that number?
I don't know, but I'm fairly certain if he was throwing the ball 67 times that game, he would have caught 67
passes. I swear in fantasy, I was going up against him in one league. I just remember being humiliated. It was like, for those of you old school Eagle fans, I don't know if you're covering the Eagles then. I think it was James Stewart, the Jaguars running back.
Yeah, I remember him.
Who had like four touchdowns against the Eagles. It might have been like four or five in the game, and like maybe three or four in the first half. And I remember like going up against him and just the pain of it. Like in fantasy, when a guy goes up against you and has a go off game, you're like, why does it have to be against me? It's so painful.
I've been in that position before. A guy we all have. Expect to go off does that. By the way, did James Stewart play at Tennessee?
There's been a Jonathan Stewart who played obviously at Oregon.
Yeah. If you get a chance, look that up while we go on. Because
James Stewart,
remember that he played at Tennessee. I'll be very.
You're probably right. Go ahead.
So next up was wide receivers coach Aaron Moorhead. I thought his press conference was really interesting. There were a couple of things that stood out to me. One, and we knew this. It's kind of funny. I mean, everybody seems to have a connection to Devontae Smith in some way. Now, Aaron Moorhead, before he was at Vanderbilt, was at Texas A&M, and recalled trying to recruit Devontae Smith there. And that, my first thought was, gee, I wonder how that went, you know, Alabama versus A&M. But A&M was pretty good. I mean, in the Kevin Sumlin years, right? I mean, they had Johnny
Manziel,
they had Mike Evans. So I imagine that maybe they had a shot at some point at Devontae Smith. But, of course, he turned them down. And this is the coach to me, Adam, that's under the most scrutiny this year, because he has just this mix of talent that has to be developed. And he's in this position where he's – the position coach for the second straight year, which has been like a foreign language for this team. So, you know, he's under the microscope this year about these guys, and he has to get this young set of receivers all on the same page and coach them up quickly.
Yeah, by the way, I was right. Oh, God, it's painful. James Stewart had 5 touchdowns against the Eagles.
5?
Yeah.
What year?
Yeah, 1997. Eagles, God. Actually, the Eagles lost the game 38-21, and I'd have to look up the box. See, this is with my memory. I only remember the negative. I was so pissed off.
Yeah, really.
In fact, I remember I refused to watch the rest of the game. I was so angry. He had 1, 2, 3 touchdowns in the first quarter, 1 in the 3rd, 1 in the 4th. And in that game, Irving Fryer had 2 touchdowns for Rodney Peete.
Wow. Yes, and he went to Tennessee, by the way. I nailed that.
Yep, one. Yep. And also Ty Detmer was started that game. And then I guess he must have got hurt. And maybe, I guess he did. I don't know. They put Rodney Peete in. Anyway, I digress.
Okay. So your thoughts on Aaron Moorhead?
Yeah, I was – look, it was he had a lot. It was like 18 minutes.
Yeah, well, he had a lot of questions that he had to take.
Yeah, sure, because you nailed it. They're under the most scrutiny. They're the most questions. It's not his fault. They're just very young, which is not a bad thing, and they have a lot of talent.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the negatives that I had heard, I think, you know, organizationally, the Eagles were very disappointed in the lack of player development overall the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we could argue whether the talent's good enough or not, but – The a lot of the talent was not developed, particularly at the receiver position. You know, he was asked about the Fulgham 4-game stretch, which was incredible, mm-hmm. where he led the NFL in receiving yardage over a 4-game mm-hmm. period. And what I liked is that he had a great, you know, because Moorhead played in the league, so he knows the way it is. And it was interesting. I don't want to say he contradicted himself, but he was asked about the Jeffrey thing when Jeffrey came back from whenever he was ready to play. And Fulgham obviously should not have given up any. He should have been the starter. And he basically more or less lost his role.
Right.
And then he talked about that the NFL is a meritocracy. The best guy should always play. Well, Fulgham should have played.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the hell. Another one where you and I didn't get a straight answer, because I know you and I checked in. Why was Fulgham losing his job?
Right.
We heard about maturity and handling his job the right way. That's definitely part of it. This happened mm-hmm. to him in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
The coaches in Detroit did not want him on the roster, period, end of story. That's exactly what happened,
right?
From our sources.
Right.
And then we heard last year he needed to handle it. And see, it's funny. I didn't know what he was referring to, but he talked about how that Fulgham learned how it's a business and how you got to come. Can't remember the exact wordage, but he I'm paraphrasing, how you always got to come to, you know, you got to bring your best every day.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't go into anything, but I know what happened last year with Fulgham. You and I know about this stuff.
Sure.
He just didn't bring it every day.
Right.
And now he knows. You don't, just because you had 4 great weeks does not mean you're the man.
Right.
And he's so gifted. He's so gifted. I mean.
And by the way, not just gifted, but really exactly what they need at that X position. Oh. They've got some little guys who can run. When I say little, I mean smaller. Not that Jalen Reagor is little, but he's electric in his run, and he's a compact runner. Yeah. They could really use one of the bigger physical guys, you know, like the Alshon Jeffrey types, mm-hmm. or what they might have thought that J.J. Arcega-Whiteside could be. They could use a guy like this who also has tremendous athleticism and can high point the ball really well. He would be the perfect complement. That's what I should say to what Nailed they it. Have with Reagor. Yep. And with Devontae Smith.
Couldn't draw it up any better. You're exactly right. It's Fulgham. Now, we have no idea who's going to be. I mean, we assume, well, they're going to have a 3-man rotation between Fulgham, Reagor, and Smith. Mm-hmm. We just don't know who's lining up where yet. We know that Fulgham is an ex who Greg Cosell told us. He goes, don't pigeonhole him to it. He played the slot also.
Right.
The thing that you and I found out from talking to coaches the last 6 months around the NFL,
mm-hmm.
a lot of them don't even talk about X and Y or Z or F. And the Eagles use F in this offense.
Right.
They talk about positionless receivers. They just talk about 2 outside receivers.
Mm-hmm.
So, and remember what Sirianni talked about. I love what he said a month or so ago about the media gets too hung up on X and Y.
Right.
Or X and Z.
Yep.
And there's definitely truth to that. More coaches we speak to, more we hear about that. It's just about, okay, who's our slot and who are 2 outside receivers?
Right.
So
Yeah, you want to be able to attack defenses where they're weak. So you want to be able to move your best weapons in areas where you think that, you know, I don't want to face this guy's number one corner. So I want to take my wide receiver and be able to put him against the number three guy. Yeah,
I totally agree.
It's a lot like the college game has been pervasive in the NFL. And it's the same thought process of spreading them out, finding the mismatches, exploiting them. Absolutely. Yep. All right, we'll get into some more assistant coach press conferences. First, we want to remind you, DraftKings, not only our favorite sports book, but it's America's top rated sports book. We love using DraftKings Sportsbook. It's easy to navigate, has plenty of instructions for new bettors and nearly limitless ways to get in on all of the action. Our friends and family have been loving DraftKings Sportsbook, and we know you will too. So listen to this great offer. DraftKings Sportsbook is going to put you courtside with a chance to turn a dollar into $100 in site credits. All you do is pick any basketball team that's still in contention, bet a buck, and if that team wins, you win $100 in site credits. And don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook also offers great odds and promotions on baseball, hockey, and so much more all week long. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, so you can deposit and withdraw your funds at your convenience. So download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use that promo code ITB when you sign up to turn a dollar into $100 in free credits and bet on the basketball team of your choice to win its next game. And if that team wins, you claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code ITB for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Got to be 21 or older, Pennsylvania only, new customers only. Wager paid out in site credits, restrictions apply in partnership with Meadows Racetrack and Casino. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, as we head back and get back into the press conferences.
That's a great offer from DraftKings, by the way.
Every week they come out with something great to want to entice people to sign up and make some money. And I know a lot of people who have been, so make sure you jump on that offer. I sensed, Adam, that you were excited for the Kevin Petullo press conference, right? Because he's kind of like, I don't want to call him the man of mystery, but the guy was on the same flight as Nick Sirianni when Nick got introduced as head coach. So you know that they're in tandem. And this is the two guys who are really like the brain trust for the Eagles offense.
Sure, sure. It's kind of in a similar way, but different, because Petullo's literally, as we talked about back in February when we had heard the roles for everyone, what we were hearing was, this is Sirianni's handpicked right-hand man, very close friend. As you said, he was on the plane with him coming over. He knows what he thinks, and they're sort of kindred spirits. They've worked together before, and he understands the kind of offense Petullo does. And they've both coached, obviously, receivers, former receivers, and quarterback background and all this stuff. So it's great. It's, but now we'll see I talked to the Jets about him. They spoke very well about him when he was on their staff there. So he's the passing game coordinator. I did like how he tied the receivers, his background in coaching receivers to his role.
Right.
And I forgot this part about it. He helped Sirianni hire the coaches. He actually was, I guess, part of the interview process or something like that. It's interesting.
Yeah, no, that is interesting. And it just goes to show you the influence that he has along with Nick. You know, he made had an answer. He was asked about, you know, why he wanted to work with Nick or what he enjoyed about working with Nick. And he mentioned that he felt Nick had just this great like presence and command and ability to relate to the players. And so I was able to ask him a question. So knowing that he knew that about Nick, like this presence and command, I was curious to hear what his reaction to Nick's first, more about his reaction to the way the public reacted to Nick's first few press conferences. So I was wondering, was he surprised? Like, was he like, holy cow, you know, this guy who I hold in such high esteem is getting sauteed already after just a press conference or two. His answer was funny because he said he was basically, while Nick was talking to the media and getting that side of the job responsibilities worked out, he was the one tasked with doing all the actual work for the offense. So he didn't even get to see them in live. He only heard about them after. And he brushed it off. But it was interesting to hear him kind of speak similarly to the way what Jeffrey Lurie said about him when he hired him, which is about his ability to really convey his message and his emphasis on competition, which we've heard.
I told you
endlessly.
It's real, man.
Yeah, it's real.
I'll be very surprised if we hear anything negative that he. I'd be shocked if he doesn't hold these players accountable based on everything and all the background you and I have done on this guy. And I like how Petullo talked about it. He just went right to it. He goes, this is what Nick believes.
Mm-hmm.
He also talked, cause he was asked about Hurts's ability to run the football. You know, he's obviously a dual threat quarterback.
Right.
And he goes, look, it's obvious you got to take advantage of that. So I'm interested to see how they use Hurts here. You know, the nice thing when you have a new staff, there's so much we don't know. We may hear things, but who the heck knows if it's going to happen? So many things happen with coaches and circumstances and injuries. I like it because there's newness. You just don't quite know exactly what's going to happen.
Definitely agree. There was one other thing he said that stood out. I'm trying to remember just kind of how his offensive philosophy. But certainly with the wide receivers, he was asked about, you know, their development and how much of a role he and Nick and Aaron can play. And I think it just goes to show.
Which we knew because they all background
it. Right. Yeah. It just goes to show that this is a position that for a long time now, the Eagles have really struggled to kind of develop. And I mean,
if we're going to say it again. Now,
then I don't know how it's going to get done.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. If these guys don't develop, then the front office missed on all of them.
Yeah.
There's all simply no way that these guys don't develop.
Exactly. All right, so the easily the best Zoom conference of the whole 2 days was Jeff Stoutland. And that's because, like, anybody who watches the NFL and sees what offensive line coaches are like, they're usually, like, either outspoken. Many of them are cranky. Some of them are just really animated. And Jeff kind of can be all of that at one time. But I don't think he's curmudgeonly, but he's very animated. And that New York accent, it's so funny. I mean, he's literally – Joe Pesci, if you close your eyes, because he
Staten
says
Island.
From Staten Island. Instead of saying like thick, he'll say tick. Like, you know, he said Andre Dillard. You know, you can tell he's adding some weight. He's a little tick, right?
I love it.
It's almost like it's my cousin Vinny here, you know, going on. But
because you could always tell Philly people, right? I say like sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, we. So you were born where? Were you born? You born in New York?
I was born in Queens. Yeah.
Queens. Okay. Do you have any words that your wife catches you saying that you go, you know?
No,
you
it's just the other way around. It's see, because here's the thing. I moved to Connecticut. You know this because, you know, you have Connecticut in your family.
Yeah.
Connecticut is a state that is very pretentious, right? And it will beat any sort of street slang or accent regional out of you. You have to be like a milk toast zombie to survive. You have to be able to talk like this through your teeth if you want to, you know, but talk with the aristocrats and everything like that. That's what Connecticut is. Connecticut is sandwiched between Boston and New York. And if most people who grew up in Connecticut don't want to be called Bostonian or New Yorkian, right? They don't want to be like that.
Didn't I hear you talking to someone say you lived up there?
In Connecticut?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was getting at. I moved to Connecticut from I lived in Connecticut from the time I was 8 until I left for college. Yeah. So it beat the accent out of me. Like I you know, even when I'm mad, I don't say like water or what's going on, and I certainly never I never did the whole Boston thing where you got a packy car in your backyard. Yeah, I hated that. So it just wound up kind of beating the accent out of me, and so I'm very neutral with my accent. Now my wife, who's from South Philly, sometimes I need an interpreter.
Like, really? What
she asked me to hand her a tail, and I'm like, what do you mean hand you a tail? She's like, give me a tail. I need a tail. I'm like, what are you, a dog or a cat? I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, and she's saying towel, right?
Did
I'm like,
she
that's
take
a
it
multi-syllable you, word, towel, not
right.
tail.
Did she get, when you bust her chops over, did she take it well or she get mad?
Well, you know, we've been married almost 15 years.
Sure.
Now, so she's used to it. But, you know, I get a side eye from it.
I'm getting annoyed when she, I do, because John Hansen does a fantasy show with me.
Mm-hmm.
He points it out too. I say likes every once in a while. I'm like, God damn it. How do I do that? L-O-I-K-E, right?
Yeah. How about goff? You know, you hear people say goff, like the
G-O-F-F, right?
For the
goff, like Judge Smales.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of the game that you play, where were
right,
your butt?
Golf.
Golf. So, yeah.
I don't say water. I say water.
You say water. Okay. Yeah.
I've never done it.
Yeah. I've heard water in this household a few times.
Sure.
But that's
okay. Oh, yeah. Listen, she's from South Philly. It's
I got a rule. Here's my rule, right? My wife's Italian. She's from South Philly. And she makes her own pasta gravy.
Gravy, okay? Yeah, gravy, sure.
All right, and it's the best thing I've ever eaten in my entire life.
Did she make marinara?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. The gravy is the red gravy, right? It's what we would call sauce in other areas, but here it's gravy, right? And it'll cook for 5 hours. She'll put the meatball and the sausage and everything in there, and it's just bliss. So my philosophy is I will call it gravy. I will use an accent, Ophelia. I will say whatever it is I need to say as to have her continue making that, because that's how good it is. All right. So I don't care. I will say water if she wants me to say water. So I grew up saying sauce. I now call it gravy, and I'm unapologetic about it because it's that damn good. Okay.
Oh man, I got to get on this one. I got to get some of that sauce.
For a Sunday dinner one day, and it's it's unbelievable. She makes a great pesto. I mean, she's unbelievable.
Mm.
So I will call anything by any accent that she asks me to, as long as I get to eat it. All right. That's fair.
I like it. I like
there
it.
You go. All right. So back to Jeff Stoutland and his Staten Island accent, but he was very animated. He talked a lot about Dillard and Mailata. And here's the thing. He said it. We know it, but he's already said it. It's a battle. It's a competition. And anyone who thought that Andre Dillard is just going to walk back into the job because he's a first round pick is mistaken, because this is truly going to be a competition. And I don't even think he's the lead horse, but he has a chance to win it.
He does.
It's a competition.
I know we've been asked this. I don't see them. Let's just say, for argument's sake, we've said this for a couple months here, that Mailata's the clear favorite. It doesn't mean he'll win it.
Right.
And it is a competition, but I just don't see them trade. If Mailata wins it, I don't see them trading Dillard. I just was going over the roster. Because they don't know about LaRaven Clark. And even if LaRaven Clark could come back in like late August,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if he could hold up physically coming off this injury.
Right.
They'd be smart to keep Dillard. Again, I'm not saying they're shopping him,
mm-hmm.
but you can't depend on Brett Toth. I mean, come on.
Well, the weird thing is that, and I've said this before, right here on Inside the Birds, going back to last year in May, that Jeff Stoutland, everybody should be loved by somebody the way Jeff Stoutland loves Jack Driscoll.
Oh yeah.
All right. Jeff Stoutland's a really big Jack Driscoll fan. And when and again, in the press conference,
when did you nail that one last year when you said it?
Yeah. I didn't know he was going to start right tackle in the opener. My God. He loves him. And he actually said this, which I found fascinating. As much as we knew he loved him, he felt like he undervalued him coming out of college. He said that he realized once he was at the NovaCare and practicing in front of him every single day that Jack Driscoll, and he said he saw signs of it at the Senior Bowl, but even more so in Philly, was mm-hmm. more sudden and explosive off the snap than even he saw on tape. So you already combine the fact that he really likes the guy, and now he thinks that much higher of him after coaching him for a year. So Adam, if Jack Driscoll is the top backup offensive tackle because Stoutland likes him so much, it does make you wonder what
backup right. He's not left tackle though.
Right. Correct. Backup right tackle. But will they keep two backup offensive tackles? Cause usually they like their top backup tackle to play, be a swing guy.
Yeah.
Are we convinced that the Eagles can't ever imagine Jack Driscoll playing left tackle in a pinch?
I mean, he's over 6'4". He's just not long enough. I look at it based on what we know.
Mm-hmm.
They're hopeful that Clark will be able to be that guy, swing tackle, also could play guard.
Right.
Nothing I've heard suggests, because in fact, I don't know if he was going to take guard reps in training camp. We need to look into that, you know,
mm-hmm.
but the good thing is, as we sum up the Eagles situation with Stoutland, they're really deep. If these guys could stay healthy for a change, they're going to have depth.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where I don't know that Matt Pryor makes the team, to be honest with you.
Well, I don't think he should make the team.
I know.
I think if he does make the team, that means some of the depth that we're talking about either got hurt or there was an issue. And so, yeah. So
I mean, he's experienced as a backup. But what I'm saying, the reason why I mentioned that is because you'll have the loser of the left tackle job. You've got Dickerson. We don't know when Landon Dickerson will be ready, but we know he's going to have a bright future. Herbig, who did a good job considering everything. Your guy Driscoll,
right?
Clark, LaRaven Clark, mm-hmm. and they're going to actually have depth if these guys can stay healthy.
Actually, I look forward to it, man. This is one of the spots where the Eagles can go from what they were really good, and then obviously last year they were really bad as a unit. Like individually, there were certain guys. Nate Herbig is a guy who, by the end of the year, you could see some positives. He does some things well, and of course Jack Driscoll. And but together when they had to play 14 different combinations, that's just a recipe for disaster. But now you get a chance to rebuild this thing back up pretty quickly if these guys pan out. So that's a good thing for Jeff Stoutland. And it was just good to hear from Jeff again. You remember there were those kind of rumors that he talked about where he might go back to Alabama. And there were, you know, obviously he lost his father in January. So condolences to him and his family. It was good that he was in good spirits and he was animated and energetic. And most of the press conferences that you watched and we had, Adam, were very like, you know, guys were good, but they weren't as excitable. And they don't talk with their hands like Jeff. And so it was fun. Jeff is like from the Nick Sirianni school of I'm everywhere, man. You know, he's got the hands flowing and all that. So it was a good press conference.
He's beloved, Stalin. For as long as you and I have covered this team for decades, he's right up there as the most beloved coach by the players in the front office. They swear by Stalin. I mean, nothing. Every player is every offensive lineman. They run for him. They want his opinion.
Yep.
Quite frankly, I don't think they would sign a lineman without or draft a lineman without Stalin signing off on it. That's just my opinion. But based on everything I've heard for a long time, and that's. That was a good move by the Eagles. You know, when Chip Kelly got fired, I got to give the Eagles credit. They did a good job of evaluating the coaches to keep for the most part. There were a couple you could question, but most of them were really good decisions.
I wondered for the first time listening to Jeff's press conference, Adam, seeing that he's been with the team for a while. Like when you start to think of the context, survived three coaches, constantly promoted, has two titles, and the way he relates to his players and how much they relate to him. If we're not talking enough about maybe him being a potential head coach someday, the way head coaching hires now are more about people managers and relatability more so than your scheme, right? I mean, David Culley just getting that job in Houston as an example. I wonder if Jeff Stoutland will be viewed as a future head coach.
Never, I have not thought about that, but yeah, look, the guy's, obviously incredibly successful as an offensive line coach. The only thing with him is because the non-play caller head coach, the so-called CEO types,
right?
There aren't a lot of them.
Nope.
And that's the thing that he fights. It's why John Harbaugh. Remember, John Harbaugh became a DB's coach just so he could help become a head coach.
Right.
That was a good decision. Now it's not like I don't think Nick's going to be. I don't think Jeff's going to be calling plays, but And by the way, he's one of the highest paid offensive line coaches for a reason. I mean, the Eagles know that.
Right.
Remember, he's
the run game designer. So by title, if people just look into it, they think, well, maybe he's got some scheme here because he's the creator of the running game.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously got to match the scheme that they're running under Sirianni. But look, he's before we get to defensive coaches, he's a very, very good coach. And as you said, with these O-line coaches, they always have personality, whether they're the guy, Howard Mudd, okay?
Yeah.
Howard Mudd was a personality.
Right.
Incredible personality. They're all personality guys, all of them.
Right. Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, make sure you're checking out our friends at phlsportsnation.com, enhancing the fans' experience with their coverage of all of our professional Philadelphia sports teams. Great coverage, great podcasts. Check them out, phlsportsnation.com, and you can find them on Twitter, at @phlsportsnation. Also, our friends at Sky Motor Cars, make sure you're checking them out too. We're going to pause real quick to get a word from them and our other great sponsors.
Sky Motor Cars in Westchester is a different sort of dealership. All it takes is one look at their Highline pre-owned vehicles that people all over the country want and need. Owner Brett Schuller, make sure you don't spend a dime of your money before you purchase the car. Sky Motor Cars allows you to make all the decisions regarding your next vehicle. At Sky Motor Cars, you never have to spend more than necessary. Visit skymotorcars.com today or call 610-918-7225.
All right, and if you do stop into Sky Motor Cars or hit them up at skymotorcars.com, make sure you let them know Adam and Jeff sent you. You'll get a great deal. Let's talk first about Tracy Rocker. You know what the most crazy thing about Tracy Rocker's press conference was, Adam? It's like after going through guys like Nick Rallis and you know, Jason Mike, you know, three days of mostly younger guys, all of a sudden you see a guy who has gray hair from top to bottom. I'm like, oh yeah, there are some veteran coaches on this staff. And Tracy, although Tracy's not a veteran NFL coach, but he's been coaching in college for quite a while. Here's what he said that really stood out to me.
Yeah, he coached with the Titans.
Forgot about that. Right.
Yes. But no, you're right. He's had nine college jobs, nine different college D-line coach jobs.
Yeah, he's been to each one.
Yep.
Here's what stood out to me. He was asked about his defensive line philosophy about his attacking, right? And he said, we want to be an attack team, of course, but he also said we want to be situational, right? He said we want to read and react at certain times, which is something I remember you reported quite a while ago would change with the defensive line scheme, right? And he said people have to understand that you can't play the same style all the time because situationally you're in different spots. He's like, let's say the team's moving the ball on you and you're backed up on your own 10 or something. Are you going to go attack the quarterback when you may need to focus on, you know, stopping that running back or something of that nature? Now, I'm not saying that he's taking a shot at anybody, right? But it is very interesting that it's almost antithetical to what Jim Schwartz was doing here for 5 years, where he was like, attack, 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 attack. We play the run on the way to the quarterback. And it's just almost a 180 to hear a defensive line coach talk about, say, well, you know, there's times you got to read and react and you got to be situational about it.
Right. Right. I thought that was interesting because he was asked by one of the reporters about, is it read and react? Is it this or is it, it's that the D line front and philosophy is completely different from the wide nine. There's nothing. It's like it's a complete 180 on what they ran on Schwartz. It's Schwartz. We would criticize him for the lack of pre and post snap disguise and aggressiveness, but you're right. The D line was all about D line pressure. That's what the wide nine is. Ironically, I saw, I don't know him. I saw Jason Babbitt, Mr. Wide Nine at a golf event earlier this week. What are the chances? You know, it's funny. He looks, yeah, he's still jacked up. He looks like he's ready to play football, but
he's quite the interesting cat.
Tracy Rocker is interesting. He was a big time college football player at Auburn.
Oh, like a legend, right?
Yeah. I don't think he got this. He was only with Washington for 2 years. I don't think he got the Super Bowl ring because I think he was gone after 90. They won the Super Bowl in 91.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just interested to see what kind of production, because it's so hard to understand. You know, we had heard that it was going to be a read and react defense, and I still believe that's true. But I do wonder what this means for Fletcher Cox and his production.
Yeah.
And these DNs and when Kerrigan plays with his hand down, I mean, how do these guys do? I don't know. I don't know how these guys are going to do this defense.
At very least, it's going to have to be an adjustment, and probably one that you don't get a great feel for when you're not doing 7-on-7s or 11-on-11s.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, you're learning. So at training camp, I think it's going to be a fairly decent adjustment for them to not just always fire off the ball at the quarterback all the time. But certainly the good thing for Tracy Rocker is he takes over a team that has a very good amount of talent on the D-line and in the pass rush. So figuring out their roles, when that's like your most difficult position, not whether guys can play or not, then you're in a pretty good spot right there.
Correct. Talk about his son as what, a major – is he a great baseball player?
Yeah, this is amazing because he almost – look, he certainly said he was proud of his son, but he almost – if you listen to him, he almost – it felt like he wished his son played football and not baseball, which is a lot of kids. You know, a lot of dads want their kid to play the sport they played. That wouldn't be so surprising if his son Kumar didn't just happen to be either the best or second best pitcher in the country pitching for Vanderbilt, which is a juggernaut college baseball team and is probably going to be a top three, five, I don't know, one of the first guys taken off the board in the Major League baseball draft. He's on the same team Vanderbilt as Jack Leiter, who is Al Leiter's son.
Oh, wow.
Right. These two guys both pitch for Vanderbilt and they're both amazing and expected to be first round picks, high first round picks.
And it's funny, Vanderbilt for years has been bad at football.
Right.
This is nothing to do with Aaron Moorhead. Aaron Moorhead, coach there. I talked to a coach who worked with Moorhead there.
Mm-hmm.
They just look, when you play, they're a high level education school.
Oh, yeah.
They're not known for football. baseball school.
Don't knock my guy. He did a nice job over there, Mr. Franklin. James Franklin did a decent job.
He did. He's the last one.
Yeah, he's the last one.
Right. Unfortunately, they're just not good at football.
Yeah. No, they're really not.
Overall,
Jay Cutler went to Vanderbilt, didn't he?
Yep, he did.
Is there anybody else that went to Vanderbilt that played in the NFL that you're like, how did this guy go to Vanderbilt?
I can't think of very, very many Vanderbilt players in the NFL.
No, I can't either. I can't either.
I know Jason Tarver worked there, who's the former Raiders and Niners. He was their DC. He's now with the Browns as a linebackers coach.
Right.
Moorhead was there at Vanderbilt.
Yeah, but he coached there. He didn't go to
Right. I'm just talking about guys in the NFL who either coached or played there. This is the only guys I can think of. Yeah.
Do you know where Aaron Moorhead played college ball?
I used to know that. I'm going to guess, and I'm sure it's going to be wrong. Texas A&M?
Yeah, no, that's not correct. I believe it was Indiana. He's a Big Ten guy.
Yeah. Oh, what do you?
Big Moorhead? Ten guy.
I don't know.
You think I'm wrong?
No, I said I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's Indiana.
IU, okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. Oh, he played for the Colts. How about that?
Yeah, how about that? Maybe they were the. I'm sorry. I said Indiana. I mean Illinois.
Sometimes Illinois.
Those teams confused. Yeah, correct. Gotcha. Illinois, he played for.
All right.
So, but he is a Big Ten guy. Nonetheless, and I actually remember when he was in the Big Ten. But so getting back to Rocker. Yeah, his son, he even said at one point, yeah, I wished he had played football, but, you know, he's doing pretty good. And
yeah,
I'm like, pretty good. This guy's going to be like a quadrillionaire in less than a month.
Tracy's a football guy, you know.
Yeah, I know. He's a football guy.
I would love to know. It's funny. I would love to know. I think I'll read up on it. How he became like the baseball player that his son, Kumar, how he became a baseball player, not a football player. Did you know early on as a kid?
Right.
Because his dad was like this big time college football player. It's interesting how that happens.
Yeah, definitely. And, other than that, I think, you know, pretty standard with his press conference.
Yep.
Nick Rallis, the linebackers coach, talked. He was certainly upfront, as you knew he'd have to be, about the fact that he's young and raw.
27.
Yeah, 27. You know, he talked about that. He said, he's appreciative of the opportunity. And the big thing from him is he said, you hold him to this, when he was coaching under Mike Zimmer the last few years as an assistant, position coach, he was trying to be a sponge, and he learned a lot from, you know, not just how Mike Zimmer game plans, but like how he like second level thinks about his game plan and the opponent. So he's going to need to have absorbed a lot of that to assert himself as the linebackers coach of a position that has a lot of question marks.
I talked to a coach who worked with him with the Vikings and said that the good thing is he knows – you know, he knows that he's young and he's the first time he's around a room, but it's really sharp. And this coach said he does believe that the players will react well to it, will react well to his coaching just because this guy thinks he's ready to be a position coach.
Hmm.
It's a lot to say at 27 years old. This is a big market. There's a lot of pressure here. The lack of development of this position has been abysmal.
Right.
For years. So this guy, I mean, this is a big responsibility for him. This is on Gannon, really. Jonathan Gannon is the one reason why the kid's here. So this is a big decision for Gannon. He's putting a stamp on this one.
Let me say this, Adam. This is going to be a little speculation on my part, educated speculation, I would say. Because he's coaching linebackers and because the Eagles have younger developmental linebackers mostly, I would say that they don't have high ego guys at linebacker because nobody really is a superstar.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Nick's transition can be a little easier as opposed to, let's say Nick Rallis was a defensive line coach. Okay. And he had to come coach guys like Fletcher Cox or, Brandon Graham or other guys who have been around for quite a while. And we've seen that the Eagles have had a lot of different D-line coaches in the last few years. I think that would be more difficult for a guy who, you know, is the same age of these guys, has never led a room before, may not have that presence that you normally have. I think you can get away with it here at linebacker. Don't know if you could say that about D-line, though, if that makes sense.
I understand. Yeah, I understand. It's funny. They're just two completely different levels of development, D-line and linebacker. I struggle. Our next show, we're going to break down linebacker. It ain't going to be pretty, folks. It ain't going to be pretty. But I got to think it's going to be better than last year.
You would hope so. You definitely hope so. All right, last guy was Denard Wilson. Interesting cat because he's doing the same job here that he did last year with the Jets. You know, he was a scout at one point with the Rams. He knows Rodney McLeod. You know, I had a chance to ask him a question. I asked him about Avante Maddox. I wanted to know if he had gone back and not just watched the tape of Maddox last year, but all the way back to his rookie year when Maddox played safety, right? Because Maddox played fairly well when he was put in that role.
Yep.
And I'm wondering, you know, are we going to see a lot of versatility and hybrid type of roles in this secondary? Now, he's not giving away the answers to the test. So but he did say that Avante, A, has been working on his eye discipline, which we knew because both of them talked about it, and B, has been taking notes on multiple positions. So I get the feeling that he will I'm not saying he's going to practice at safety or that they have it in mind, but it does sound like that they view him as someone who can move around, and they are looking to figure out where the best place for him is going to be.
Yeah.
I think we know where it's not going to be, but we don't know where it is going to be.
If he starts open day on the outside, I'd be shocked. That means they didn't sign Steven Nelson or a veteran off the street. It means they didn't trade for a veteran. I mean, they know that, listen, they're going to add a veteran. I just can't tell you when it's going to be because they're off the money on Nelson, and teams typically don't make a starting corner available. And we're going to, when we do our DB show, which will be next Thursday, I'll give you the list of guys, bottom end guys. Like they found Josiah Scott was a bottom of the roster guy. Right. Those are the type of guys teams are going to be willing to trade to you. Guys who don't fit the new coaching staff, and he's shorter. The Jaguars, they didn't want him, this new staff. Mm-hmm. He doesn't fit their size quotient. Mm-hmm. They want guys with longer arms and are longer.
Because Urban Meyer is Chip Kelly. They're like the same guy. So, of course, they're going to have all these specifications for, you know, what a guy
right.
has to look
right.
like.
Right. So, he you know, though he was a fourth-round pick, but, again, he was drafted by a different front office, although Trent Baalke was with them last year, but he didn't have personnel control when Scott was drafted. So Urban Meyer does in Jacksonville, and he didn't want him. So here you go.
Interesting. By the way, are you shocked? I guess I'm a little shocked now that I think about it, that Urban Meyer did not bring in Billy Davis to his staff.
I thought he was supposed to. I'll check. I could have sworn he was.
Billy's has been at Ohio State for the last few years as what, the linebackers coach there?
Or? Yeah, they're very close. I
best man at his wedding.
Let me see. I'll look now.
I just think Charlie, that's interesting. Yeah, because
Charlie Strong is on that. Sanjay Lau is a tremendous coach. That was a good get for him.
Good wide receivers coach. Yeah.
Brian Schottenheimer is going to coach quarterbacks. He's a passing game coordinator. Mm-hmm. Bernie Parmalee. Bob Sutton. Wow. Bob Sutton came out of retirement. He's their senior defensive assistant.
Wow. That is interesting.
Nope. He is not. Billy Davis is not on the staff. I mean,
those two guys are as close can be. So unless they, you know, not as close as they were. But I know when Billy Davis was here as the defensive coordinator, you know, he came recommended to Chip by Urban Meyer. And one of them was the best man in the other's wedding.
Wow.
Either Billy was the best man for Urban or Urban was the best man for Billy. But either way.
How about that?
So, all right, interesting stuff. Was there something else on the secondary that Denard Wilson said that stuck out? He talked about – oh, here's what I wanted to – before we end. Because you said that if Avante Maddox starts on the outside, it's kind of a failure, right? What if I gave you this scenario?
Right.
Avante Maddox and Darius Slay are your starting outside corners, but when the team goes to nickel – Zach McPherson comes, plays the outside, and Avante slides inside.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair way to look at it because the Eagles are going to be a nickel team. They're going to be a 4-2-5 team.
Right.
So, okay, that's technically their base. Not their base. That's what they're going to play most of the time.
Yeah.
It's true. It's a very fair point you make. What if he's in the slot 70% of the time?
Right.
But you can't have McPherson being that 70% guy on the outside. You just can't. You can't think like that's the answer.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that when you're playing the Giants and they have a healthy Saquon Barkley and you're playing Dallas, who still will.
By the way, both teams are going to spread it out. Yeah. Spread it out.
No. What I'm saying with those two running games and even Washington, which tends to lean heavily on the run, I do think that you're going to have to probably in your division games play a little more base than you normally do.
I don't agree with that.
You don't think so? Look at Jason Garrett doesn't. He's always
no, but look, yeah, but here's the problem though. Okay, mm-hmm. Here's the problem. If you look at the Giants personnel, right?
Yep.
Darius Slayton, Kenny Golladay, John Ross, Shepard, and Tony was their first round pick.
Right.
You can't just be 12 personnel all the time. Now I know they brought in Kyle Rudolph. I get it. I know they want to run the ball.
I was going to say, I agree with your point of all the weaponry they had. They had great weaponry in Dallas, and he was still putting two tight ends out there. I'm kind of knocking Jason Garrett and saying that that's kind of
but they didn't have what Dallas has now. They've got three receivers all can play.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to be Dallas is going to be a lot of 11 personnel this season with Gallup, Cooper, and CeeDee Lamb. Of course.
And no Garrett. But I'm just, you know, Rivera has always been a heavy run guy. Did Antonio Gibson get hurt, by the way? Did I read that?
What happened is he had a turf toe injury last year, and he's still dealing with a little bit of it.
That's tough to be still dealing with it. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know quite why he didn't have that fixed. If it's still bothering him, then that's not a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, remember Jordan – wasn't it – no, he had a stinger. Who had turf toe and was out for quite a while for the Eagles – recently? Didn't someone have that? Was it Sproles? I don't know. I thought somebody had turf toe and was out for a while.
You mean was an offensive guy?
Yeah, I thought it was an offensive
guy. I don't remember.
I don't know, but that can linger. That can be a really, really difficult injury.
Well, it's look, turf toe. I know players whose careers have ended for severe turf toe.
Yeah.
Who knows? Well,
I like Antonio. I know he's Washington and he's the Eagles' rival, but I enjoyed watching him last year, so I hope he's healthy.
He's really gifted. Folks who haven't heard it, listen to our interview with Ryan Silverfield, the head coach of Memphis, who talks about not only the game well stuff is phenomenal, but he talks about Gibson and how when they brought him in, you know, how big he was to be a slot receiver. Can you imagine a 230 some odd slot receiver?
I cannot. That's what makes him very, very special.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing I can equate that to is Brian Westbrook, who could line up in the slot, but he would be like 205, not 230. So, sure, I mean, that's true. No, that's incredible. Maybe who was the wide receiver? Colston. He was what, 210?
215? Marcus Colston. He was 6'4", 6'5", 215.
Yeah, but geez, 230. That's just a whole different animal coming at you.
And Colston was moved to the slot later in his career. Boy, boy, what a story is that from Hofstra.
Oh, that was, yeah, definitely. What a great development.
An entrepreneur now. Great dude, man. Really good dude.
Definitely a good dude. All right. Are you doing any Twitch?
Some Monday through Thursday, 7 Eastern. And then your powder blue.
Yep. It's out. Our most recent one.
Yeah. So you brought this up before we get out of here. You brought this up because I'd asked you, are you concerned about Joe Girardi still?
Man, yes, but I got bigger concerns than just Joe Girardi. I mean, like, you know, the rampant errors that I could have never predicted this team making. And look, philosophically, I don't think they're built the right way. They have just too much of this team is free agent guys. And some of them are very good, not just Bryce Harper, but, you know, even Didi when healthy is a good player. Obviously, you've gotten a great pitching out of Zach Wheeler. But you can't be built where 80% of your best players are free agents, because that's why you're up against the luxury tax, but you don't have much to show for it as far as development and zero cheap labor, zero in-house labor that is, you know, rookie other than Alec Boehm, who's had a tough year. So
we'll see if that Williams kid is any good.
Luke Williams. So at some point close to this year's trade deadline, Adam, if you're still just hovering around 500, a couple games over, a couple games under, then I think you got to look and say, I may have to start really trading off pieces.
I agree.
You know, trying to rebuild this farm system, because whole idea of adding each year is not getting me anywhere.
It doesn't get it. Look, they're a terrible defensive team. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
They're a three-man pitching staff. We've known that. Earl Weaver would love this team. They play for the big inning because they don't hit. They don't put the ball in play. They strike out like crazy.
Right.
Segura is really the only guy that's consistent, you know.
Amazing. And then he had that error stretch, and then all of a sudden he's fine now, and somebody else is making errors. So they really have to consider, and this is on Dave Dombrowski, like he has to be honest with himself. If you're second place in the NL East, but you're two games over 500, are you really going to say, but we got a shot to make the playoffs? Like, I mean, you've been doing
a tough call for an owner
year after year, you know,
these teams, major league baseball teams, in terms of not making money with fans for, you know, over a year. And I know they're going now, It's hard. I get the sentiment. I personally would do what you just suggested. It's who cares if they get in the playoffs? Like, I know some people say, oh, no, if they get in the playoffs, you got to go for it. Right. They're not going anywhere.
That's my point. And so you can't be tricked by some kind of in the running kind of status. You've got to at some point seriously consider trading some assets, like Hector Neris, who's having a great year. And I'm not sure he can do that.
He never sustained it.
Somebody will want him. Every team wants back end bullpen help at the trade deadline.
Right.
So, all right. So that's our Phillies talk. And I still think the Sixers are going to win in six. So
that's what I picked him before. Embiid is just knock on wood. I just cannot believe what he's doing with this injury.
It's been great to really see a player play at the top of his game.
In this market, it's unbelievable. Iverson, to a certain degree. I mean, he was so much fun to watch.
Wentz in 2017.
Yep. For but obviously
since
Wentz,
then,
yes.
Right. We really haven't seen since Wentz in 2017 a player of prominence playing like an MVP. Bryce Harper's been very good, but he just hasn't really played
MVP level.
I have no issue with him.
I'm sorry.
I said I have no issues with him in the contract. Yeah. I think he's been fine. Yes. I'm just saying he's not, you know, taking
not this like this. This is this is what Embiid is, and he grew up. You know, he knew he had to get in better shape. He's just so much. I remember. I'll never forget this. Before we get out of here, this is like 3 years ago. I'm down at the stadium complex. It was after I was working for the Philadelphia Soul, and I know he liked to go out in the town and see and you know hang out and stuff. We're waiting to get into Xfinity Live. He's actually in line. They're not even letting him in. Well, it's funny because I can't see his face, but I'm like, who is this tall guy? I'm like, wait a minute. Is that Embiid? What is he doing? Let him in.
They didn't.
He was in the line.
Did they not know who he was?
No, but they just weren't letting him in. He was in line with his friends. So I'm like, okay.
Oh my God. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, all right. That is going to do it for this episode of Inside the Birds, the leading podcast in Eagles intel. We will hit up the linebacker preview next podcast, unless, of course, there's even more hard news.
By the way, it's funny. Between this show tonight or today and the Q&A show, this is almost 3 hours of shows, folks.
Yes.
You wanted long shows? You got them.
We're going too long and people are going to get annoyed.
I know.
I would listen for 3 hours. And I'm like, don't tempt us.
Right. Yeah. No, I don't think I could do that.
Definitely not. Yeah. But listen, as always, check out our friend Hunter Brody, our producer. He's on @Brodes81 Twitter. And of course, his YouTube channel is called Sports Talk with Brodes, his website, Brodes Media. And as we always do, we thank you for flying with us for about an hour and a half here, Inside the Birds.